Are you a book lover who also loves to travel? Have you ever combined the two? Planned a trip based on a book? Visited an author's hometown? Or explored a location that you read about in a favorite book? Tell us about your literary inspired journeys this hour as we talk about literary tourism. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on this Thursday, July 18th. Our guest will tell us how she started traveling to literary destinations with her book club. And now she has come up with a book of her own detailing places to go and things to do in some of the country's best literary tourism spots. We'll travel to St. Paul and Chicago, among other places that are highlighted in her book, Off the Beaten Page. And maybe we can give her some other book or author-inspired locations in Wisconsin and elsewhere in case she decides to write a sequel. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Terry Peterson-Smith is a journalist, editor, and travel blogger. She is the author of Off the Beaten Page, The Best Trips for Lit Lovers, Book Clubs, and Girls on Getaways. Hello, Terry. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Joy. I'm so excited to be with you.
I love this idea because I love books and I love to travel. You say that that loving books and travel, reading and travel, already have a lot in common, that we read and travel for many of the same reasons. What are they?
Well, I look at it from two angles. As a reader, I put down a book and go, wow, I wish I could see that. And traveling to a place you've read about, which is basically what I call literary travel, just gives you this a great way to extend the experience of a book. It's so exciting to really smell the smells of a place and eat the food and meet people and things like that that give you that connection to the book. But also from the traveling side, reading a couple books about your destination just give you a great sense of context, a little connection to a place. Even if you've been there before, you can see it in a new way, actually, through books. And travelers are really just increasingly looking for ways to find meaningful travel experiences, authentic experiences that aren't superficial. Because there's so many chain restaurants, chain hotels, chain stores, whatever. And this is a great way to give a framework for a trip that takes you just a little bit beyond the ordinary.
And tell us how you started doing this with your book club.
Well, actually my interest in literary travel goes back even before that. I was lucky enough as a kid to have a mom who dragged me to the library every time we were taking a family vacation, and we'd load up on books about our destination. So when we went to Boston, for example, I read Johnny Tremaine, which is about a boy in colonial America. It just really captured my imagination. I love that. And with my own kids, I did the same thing. We read Hank the Cow Dog before we went on a trip out west and things like that. But then I did a couple of trips with my book clubs. Actually, I'm in a couple because I'm a avid reader. And we started with short trips. We went to, we read the book Sea Biscuit, about the great racehorse, Laura Hillenbrand's book, and then went to the racetrack, little local things like that, and then started branching out further and further. In fact, one of our trips, we read a book by Wallace Stegner called Crossing to Safety, which partly takes place around Madison, and we rented an RV. You have not really traveled until you've traveled with 10 women in an RV to an area of Wisconsin where a friend of ours had a cabin. And then we later read The Devil in the White City, Eric Larson's book, and went to Chicago. And after each of these trips, I would come back and tell people about it, and they'd be like, oh, wow, I wish I could do that. And it became clear to me that it's something that's so much fun, and you come back with such great memories. I really wanted to share that with other people.
So you said that you went to a cabin in Wisconsin, or went to a location in Wisconsin in an RV. You didn't include any Wisconsin spots in the book, this book, though, did you?
No, you know what? It was really tough to narrow it down. I grew up in Michigan, and I didn't include Michigan. Yes, I need to do a sequel.
Good.
Even further off the beaten page. You know, you can only include so many to start with, and there are many, many great places in this country that you could do exactly the same thing.
Well, you know, we will talk about as many as we can throughout the hour, but it actually, this topic came up in other contexts for me, where we were talking about Laura Ingalls Wilder, for example, who we have a museum here in Wisconsin. She
sure.
Grew up in Pepin.
Mm-hmm.
And people called in on this program to say that they actually planned their vacations to go to the various little houses on the prairies and by the lakes and in the woods where Laura Ingalls Wilder grew up. And that was their vacation, was to follow her footsteps.
Isn't that funny? That's exactly what I'm talking about. Those books are just so popular, and people, it grabs their imagination, and then they want to go there. In fact, I've done some of those little trips, little excursions in Wisconsin and here in Minnesota. So,
yeah, and we also talked to the author of Eat, Pray, Love. So many people, it made her journey their journey. They decided to do the same thing, you know, go to the different countries that she went to study yoga or whatever. Why would you do that?
I think books inspire us to go beyond our routine. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the biggest thing. And there are a lot of high-end tour groups who, you know, cater to those experience, who create those experiences for you, but reading a book can help you come up with your own literary travel experiences that take you, help you do things that are maybe not exactly exotic, like Eat, Pray, Love, but, you know, get you out in doing different things than you would have imagined doing traveling. I think everybody's looking for, you know, get out of their routine and challenge themselves a little bit. You know, the interesting thing about Eat, Pray, Love is, you know, it sounds exotic and all that, but you can do much more affordable things in this country close by, even just for a weekend.
Yeah, well, let's talk about something we could do for the weekend, especially let's talk about St. Paul. That's not too far away for us to go. You highlight St. Paul. Why?
Well, St. Paul is where F. Scott Fitzgerald grew up. And you know, the Twin Cities in general offer quite a number of variety of literary-related opportunities, and all the destinations in the book are places that I think are just plain fun to go anyway, and then mm-hmm. reading a book just gives you a much closer connection to it all. In St. Paul, for example, you can go wander the neighborhood, the Cathedral Hill neighborhood, where F. Scott Fitzgerald grew up, and it's lovely anyway, and then to throw in the Fitzgerald angle is really intriguing. And there's a book called The St. Paul Stories of F. Scott Fitzgerald. So that's an easy one to pick up, read before you go. And you start to see, there's one story in there called Winter Dreams. You can start to see some of the issues that he wrote, that he dealt with in all of his writing. You know, sort of the idea of aspiring to more than you have. And when you look at where he grew up, in a house that was, you know, middle class, and he's surrounded by upper class homes on Summit Avenue, James J. Hill, those kinds of people, he was always looking, you know, striving for more. And that is in Winter Dreams. And you can see where the little seeds came together that became his masterpiece, The Great Gatsby. So it's really fun. It makes you start thinking not only about the book, but the history of the location where you are, and it's just an enjoyable place to be.
Yeah, and you also talk about Garrison Keillor in that section.
Yes, he's a Prairie Home Companion, a great St. Paul guy, and he has a bookstore there called Common Good Books. It's right, you know, adjacent to that neighborhood. So, and independent bookstores are very fun places to visit along the way, and the people in those stores always have great suggestions for local authors and things that you can't find in other ways.
Yeah, you also, moving to Chicago and staying with the public radio theme, Scott Simon, Weekend Edition. Scott Simon is from Chicago and wrote books about Chicago, and you say that we can check out some of the things he wrote about.
Oh, yes, and you know, he's I just think he's charming anyway. He wrote a book, one book in particular called Windy City, that's kind of his take on, it's a fictional book about Chicago politics. And, you know, there's kind of some it's fictional, but there's some interesting similarities to real people. And then he also has a book called Home and Away that's a memoir of his about growing up in Chicago. So, yeah.
Yeah, and but most of the literary travel in Chicago is the architecture of Chicago.
That was my theme for that chapter, because I just think that's one of the most distinctive aspects of Chicago, and I think the adventurous architecture there is just sort of a symbol for the whole attitude of the city. You know, a little bit risk taking, you know, that toddling town kind of deal, and all that really started right after the Chicago fire, and you with the World's Fair that took place at the end of the 1800s, two centuries ago, actually, and that sort of set the tone. When all the buildings that were built, there were very famous architects involved in that, and it set the tone for what was to come in Chicago. And you can really trace that down now right to Millennium Park. And so it's kind of interesting. During the fair, Frank Lloyd Wright was just a young man then, and he walked through there and just did not like the architecture at all. And it was really interesting that he, you can read a book called Loving Frank that's a fictional history about his life in starting out in Oak Park just outside Chicago and the houses he built and his relationships with a number of women. So the two ends of the two types of architects that got Chicago started were very interesting. And as a sidelight, with the Frank Lloyd Wright side of it, if you're really interested in all that, even if you're not a Frank Lloyd Wright fan, he's quite a juicy story, Loving Frank in particular. And you can head off to Taliesin in Wisconsin and see, you know, part of that story. They actually have a Loving Frank tour there also.
Yeah, there we go. There's something we can do right here in Wisconsin.
Yes, and you know, even though it's not in the book, one of my favorite Wisconsin trips. I should add, you know, this is just an example. You can just so easily come up with books that you really like and make a trip that is right in your own backyard. There's an author that I'm a huge fan of named David Rhodes, and he has a book called Driftless, about the Driftless, the southwest corner of Wisconsin, and a new book that takes place there called Jewel Weed. And if you take a trip there, I wrote an article about for Minnesota Monthly about this. You just read those books and then go travel around the Driftless area. And it's just kind of funny. It's like, oh, I know these people. You see just what was in the book. And the landscape, go to Wildcat Mountain State Park, things like that. It's really fun.
That sounds great. So the book is Driftless, and it's about the Driftless region of Wisconsin. And if we want to follow up on this, it's just traveling around to the various locations that he mentions in the book.
Yeah, and just that general section of Wisconsin, Viroqua. There's just so many Amish farms, and the landscape there is so distinctive, dairy farms and just things that are featured in the book, that kind of quiet pastoral life there.
We are talking with Terry Peterson-Smith. She is a journalist, editor, and travel blogger. She is the author of Off the Beaten Page, The Best Trips for Lit Lovers, Book Clubs, and Girls on Getaways. She blogs at offthebeatenpagetravel.com. And we are talking about literary travel. Are you a bookworm who also has a travel bug? We'll get you some help for that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Have you visited the setting of your favorite book or the home of your favorite author? What does seeing a place that you've read about in works of fiction mean to you? Do you have any favorite places or experiences or maybe suggestions for a literary itinerary? We welcome your call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Well, instead of taking your beach reads to the beach, have you ever taken a vacation inside your favorite beach read? Have you ever gone to Boston, for example, to take in the maritime flavor of Moby Dick? Or have you ever thought of taking a riverboat tour on Mark Twain's Mississippi River? We are talking with a guest who has written a guide to literary travel, detailing dozens of ways that book lovers can explore the worlds of books from the places in which they're set. And we're welcoming your questions and your own experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Terry Peterson-Smith is the author of Off the Beaten Page, The Best Trips for Lit Lovers, Book Clubs, and Girls on Getaways. And we have a listener who called in to say that Stephen King spent 3 years in De Pere, Wisconsin. I did not know that. And that King's autobiography opens up with him saying, "That's why he's so strange." That's hilarious. So we could look up where Stephen King lived and just go, you know, wander around his house? Or what do you think, Terry?
I don't know if I'd want to do that. It sounds kind of creepy. But I try to emphasize, I think it's fun to go to writers' houses, by the way, but I'm more interested in what they were writing about. I don't know. It goes both ways. I was just in Chicago visiting Ernest Hemingway's house there in Oak Park, and that was a lot of fun, the house that he grew up in, and then there's an Ernest Hemingway museum. So, if you happen to be someplace, that's fun. But I also think it's important to look for, to experience the places that they're actually writing about. You don't really find the essence of the author in the house they lived in as much as the places that they were writing about. Right. Interestingly enough, I never realized that he wrote his most famous book, The Shining, in Boulder, Colorado, and that's one of the destinations in the book. I don't necessarily think of Boulder. I think of it as a really fun outdoorsy college town, but not so much a literary place. But that's where he got the inspiration for The Shining. There's just about 45 minutes from Boulder is the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, which is, a big white hotel. And apparently he was there at the end of the season and the halls were empty and his imagination got firing. And,
I didn't know that either. I've been to Estes Park, so that particular hotel there was the inspiration of The Shining.
Mm-hmm. And they have, not surprisingly, a tour relating to that, and it's really fun.
That's interesting. I know this particular listener also says that King's hometown of Lovell, Maine, would be a great place to visit. But again, that's just something you might want to go to a community, and if an author happens to be there, you're more in where they set their books, not so much just because they were born there, though.
Yes, but I will say, if you go to some of those places, you start to see what went into their thinking, their outlook. There's some people, that's one of the things that was so much fun about writing this book. You start to see how distinctive each part of the country is. We're like many different countries in a way. And that influences the authors a lot. And everybody's very proud of their local and regional arts, music, and literature. And to go and experience what kind of cultivated, inspired that writer's thinking where they grew up. That's an interesting component of it.
Go ahead.
Well, as we're talking, people mention little places like this. Maine would be a great place to go. There are a number of books that take place there that are great. So one thing I'm trying to really encourage people to do is, even if you just go locally, find a couple books. They can be any genre that you like. It doesn't have to be highbrow stuff. We're not talking Chaucer, find something that's fun to do and go read about and then go have an experience that way. And another component of this that I think is the great thing about literary travel is that the relationship component of it. You read a book together and you have common ground with whether it's a book club, your spouse, a surly teenager, you know, whatever, read a book together and then go have an experience. And you come back with, you know, memories that last a lifetime. So that's really what I want to, you know, encourage people to do. Get out there and try something different together.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Maria in La Crosse. Hi, Maria.
Hi. Hey, great show. I just was watering plants and came in and heard you talking about Eat, Pray, Love. I'm taking a trip to Bali next year, but not for that reason.
Okay.
I was calling just, you had already mentioned Ernest Hemingway when you talked about Oak Park. I stayed at the right end there, and that is a neat little town in Oak Park to check out and see. So I was glad that you brought that up. But I was reading a book called The Elephant's Journey, and it's about a king and queen who get invited to a wedding, and they don't have a gift for him, so they just go in this old part of the castle and get this elephant and give it, you know, take it through northern Italy and the Alps and the Mediterranean Sea and all of this stuff and take it to the imperial city. And so it's this journey of this elephant going over sea and mountains. And so I just got on Google Earth and started mapping it out to see what this journey was. And it was pretty fascinating. So,
are you going to take that trip sometime then, Maria?
Yeah, I might have to get an around-the-world ticket to do it.
Oh, wow.
It might
and
be
an
a-
elephant.
Yeah. On an elephant, no. It was treacherous.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, that is. So, how do you recommend, besides looking at some of the ideas in your book, that people might plan their own literary travel?
You can do it from either direction. If there's a book that you love and want to go explore that place, that's great. But, you know, if there's a place you would love to go and want a better understanding, a little more context of it, you can go do it that direction. There are a lot of places I think people go and don't really get to the kernel, get to the essence of the place. I always talk about New Orleans. You know, I just live right outside Minneapolis. And New Orleans could not be any different than we are, mm-hmm. just at the other end of the Mississippi. And people think about it as, you know, just a big drunken party on Bourbon Street. And there's so much more to that city in terms of the history and the literature and just the people that live there. It's really a fun way. It's fun to explore it that way. In terms of books, I always tell people to look for books that give you a real sense of place. There are a lot of books that take place somewhere. They're set there, but they don't give you a feeling, a sense of the place. So that's important to look for.
What's a book that gives you a sense of place of New Orleans?
Oh, well, there's one I tell people a lot about that I discovered there. It's a guy named John Bignay, who I think typically is more a playwright. He wrote a book called Oyster that takes place outside of New Orleans in the bayou in an oyster farm. And it's a murder mystery. It's just great. It's very evocative of the place.
I love going to New Orleans. We honeymooned there, and we have other reasons to go, but I've never been on a literary tour of New Orleans. What are some other things I might want to check out based on books?
Well, it's interesting because it's really no surprise that places that are as unusual as New Orleans are also literary hubs. There's just so much to write about there. It depends on what you're looking for. Tom Piazza wrote a great book right after Hurricane Katrina. It's a fiction book called City of Refuge that's about that experience, which they've recovered tremendously from that, but that will always be a major part of history in New Orleans. There's another book that really surprised me by Anne Rice, who usually you think of as the queen of the vampire mm-hmm. novel, but she wrote a great historical fiction book called Feast of All Saints about New Orleans free people of color that's really just a great book. There's another author I like named Chris Wiltz who does primarily, detective mystery stories there, but they're very evocative of New Orleans. There's a ton of great books from New Orleans.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Terry Peterson-Smith. She is author of Off the Beaten Page, The Best Trips for Lit Lovers, Book Clubs, and Girls on Getaways. We are talking about literary travel, traveling to destinations that are based on or inspired by a book or an author. And we wonder if you do this. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Deanna in Hurley. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I'm enjoying your show. I've listened to it before, but this is the first time that I wanted to call, so it's great.
Well, I'm glad you called. Have you traveled to a place based on a book or an author?
Yes, I read Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil by William Barrett, and I thought, I was trying to figure out, I had never been to Savannah. So we took a trip to Savannah, and like you said, in many places, they have tours of the book, and it was really fascinating to find out about that whole area.
Wow, and how did that, how did it enhance your experience, having read the book?
I knew what to look for. I went and I asked, how do I get to this place? And they said, oh, we have a tour. And we went to the cemetery where they talked about where they sat around. She had cocktails with her husband who had died. And it was totally fascinating. It also caused me to go read another one of his books. I think it was called City of the Fallen Angels. And that took place in Venice. And it was just a fascinating book, and my daughter and I said, well, let's check that out. So we went and checked that out. So it does create an interest enough sometimes for me to want to take a trip there.
I love it. So you did go to Venice as well?
Absolutely.
Oh, wonderful.
He's a really good author.
Didn't that make a great mother-daughter trip?
It was a wonderful trip. Absolutely fabulous.
I just think it's a great way to bond with people.
Yes.
It truly is. It was, and we enjoyed it. The interesting thing is my friend that was traveling with me to Savannah had not read the book. So what we did is, and my mother was with me also, this is the trip to Savannah, we went to the local library, rented the book on tape, and all the way to Savannah. We listened to this again so they would be familiar with it. So it really was a lot of fun.
What a good idea. If somebody didn't read it, that's a way to do it. Well, it sounds great. Thank you so much, Deanna.
And his books really introduce you to the quirky local characters that you wouldn't meet just as a regular traveler.
Larry on Facebook writes, I once made a quick decision to get off the train at Salinas, California, then made my way to Monterey. I just had to see them because I read all of the John Steinbeck books. So many of his stories take place in this area. Yeah, that would be. Thanks very much, Larry, for that comment.
And Joy, I encourage anyone who wants to share these further. I have a blog called Off the Beaten Page Travel, and I just love hearing from people and sharing those stories on my blog. I'm always trying to update that with all sorts of different literary travel ideas. So it's really fun to share those with each other.
Yes. Barb in Oconomowoc is with us now. Hi, Barb.
Hi. Yeah, I can't believe that nobody's mentioned Kathleen Ernst yet with her books. The first one especially is based on Old World Wisconsin.
I'm sorry. No, you're the first one to mention it. Tell us about that.
Okay. Kathleen Ernst did work there, but the books are based back in the 1980s, and so there's no cell phones to communicate that kind of stuff to ruin the plot.
And long time ago.
Yeah. And so her first book was called Old World Murder, and it takes place at the old grounds of Old World Wisconsin. And then she does offer tours every once in a while of Old World and where this book took place. You check the Wisconsin Historical State site to come up with dates for that. Her next book was Heirloom Murders, and the main character is Chloe Elferson, and
good Scandinavian name.
Yeah. Well, Barb, thanks a lot. I bet you. I'm guessing, Terry, you don't know about Old World Wisconsin, or do you?
I don't. And I got my paper and pencil here, and I'm writing all these down as fast as I can. That sounds quite intriguing.
Yeah, thanks very much. Well, Old World Wisconsin is a historical site where they do living history there.
Mm-hmm.
But
what's
I guess she
near?
Eagle, Wisconsin,
okay.
Which is in the southeastern quadrant of the state.
Okay.
So, but in any case, of those books sounds like they were fictional accounts of what happens in the area.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Barb, for the call. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question for our guest about literary travel, or if you have an experience of visiting a place that you read about in a book, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So have you ever traveled somewhere because you were inspired by an author? Is there some place you would like to see because you read about it in a book? We are getting some ideas for literary destinations from our guest this hour, and we are wondering where in the book world you have traveled. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine, and we are talking with Terry Peterson-Smith. She is author of Off the Beaten Page, The Best Trips for Lit Lovers, Book Clubs, and Girls on Getaways. She also blogs at offthebeatenpagetravel.com. And our next caller is Trish in Oconomowoc. Hi, Trish.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I used to work at the Thurber House, which is a home in Columbus, Ohio, in downtown Columbus, that was the former boyhood home of author James Thurber. And that was my first job out of college. And one of the projects I did when I was there was compile a glove box guide to literary Ohio. That sounds pretty similar to what your guest put together.
Can you give us a couple of examples, Trish, of places we would go?
I was trying very hard to remember. It's been almost 15 years now, but one of the things that there was a couple of festivals in Ohio, and there's quite a few graves of famous authors in Ohio in downtown Columbus. And James Thurber has a pretty famous grave site with just one of the illustrations from his book as part of the grave site. So it really focused on people who are no longer living, but it of course brought back all the memories, but not a lot of detail.
Well, can you give us any, is that one thing we might consider, just visiting the grave sites of famous authors, Terry?
I think it depends on what else is nearby.
Because you want to have other things going on, right?
I really do. You know, if that's something to see on the way to somewhere, that's pretty cool. You know what's funny about some of these things, too? You know, speaking of Laura Ingalls Wilder, people come from all over the world to do these things. So it just sort of makes you appreciate what's in your own backyard sometimes. But when I chose the destinations for the book, my goal was to provide a whole long weekend. That's how I chose these destinations, because it's not just literary. I want people to understand this isn't like a stuffy field trip. These are places where you can go not more than an hour from a major airport. So they're easy to get to. Once you're there, you and your group can just walk everywhere for the most part. But they have, you know, great restaurants and nightlife and shows and outdoor activities to do in addition to your literary activities. And I think it's important when you're planning trips to consider, having a little a variety of things to do when you go that, you know, keeps everyone happy.
Yeah, our caller mentioned festivals. You have a blog where you talk about all the different book festivals going on in different cities across the nation. So you could also, I guess, plan your trip and attend a book festival as well.
Yeah, and if you're a book lover, wow, you can really get a super dose of books in one spot. One of the fun ones that I went to in the process of researching this book, back to New Orleans, was the Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival, which is just fascinating. And at the end of that, it was just a riot. This is an only in New Orleans experience. They have the Stanley and Stella shouting contests, you know, like that famous scene where Marlon Brando's shouting, "Stout out,"
right,
and
right,
ripping his T-shirt off. So people do that. It was just a riot. But, you know, just all over the country, there are terrific literary and book festivals. Chicago, speaking of Chicago, they have the Printer's Row Lit Fest. They're everywhere. So, yeah, I have a list of those in the book.
Well, one of my producers, Robin Cherry, is going to Memphis in a bit. She's actually going to be doing some stuff revolving around Elvis Presley Week. you do feature Memphis, don't you, in the book?
I do.
Yeah, tell us some fun things that she can do while she's there.
I chose that book, that destination, partly because I wanted to tie something to Mark Twain. He's such a crucial writer in our history and so influential, and you know, the Mississippi River is a huge part of his work. And Memphis is one place where you can actually get out on a riverboat and feel what it was like to be, you know, a little bit anyway, of what it was like to be Mark Twain as a cub riverboat pilot. It's just fascinating to really experience the river. But then, so I tied that with life on the Mississippi. But then I realized, and you're out on the river, you start to understand the geography of the place and the Mississippi River Delta, where you know, the cotton plantations were. And after the Civil War, you had the Great Migration, when the former slaves, many moved north and brought with them their musical traditions of gospel music and created the Delta Blues. You got the whole music angle, of course, in Memphis. Beale Street, Stax Records is awesome if you're a R&B lover. Ike and Tina Turner started there. Just Otis Redding, just the greats. And they have a dance floor there where it's all surrounded by a video wall. So you just cannot even stand still there. You have to dance in Memphis. But then also, you know, sort of the less happy side of Memphis, what is its experience in relation to civil rights? And that's one thing that really gripped me about Memphis. There's the great music and the happy side of it, but also a place that was such a critical part of this country's history. There they have the Civil Rights Museum, which is at the Lorraine Motel, where Martin Luther King was assassinated. And if you read a book called Hellhound on His Trail by Hampton Sides, It's just gripping. That's a nonfiction book, and you understand all that happened leading up to that in the hunt for James Earl Ray afterward. So there's just, you know, quite a cross-section of activities in Memphis, as well as, you know, just beautiful gardens and things like that. Memphis is one of those places you go to, you really get a cross-section of, you get a feeling of the South, I think.
Yeah, let's take some more calls. Vicki in Algoma is with us now. Hi, Vicki.
Hello. One of the things that I did was read Michener's Hawaii before going to Maui, and it made the experience so much greater. I went in the off-season. I was able to go through Hale's house, and then I was on a whaler that they have a museum, and I was the only person on it. Because of the book, it was just such a rich experience.
Mm-hmm.
You were the only person on it, Vicki?
Yeah, on the boat. It was just like, brought it so alive because of the book.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice thing to do. If you're planning a trip anyway, you can read a book about it, or, you know, a book that might be based there, Terry. That's another way to go.
Exactly. Just, you know, go from that direction. Boston's one of those places that you can have that sort of similar whaling experience reading. You could read Moby Dick, or just read The Perfect Storm, which takes place in Gloucester, just north of Boston. You can get out on the water. There's some great trips out to, it's called the Stellwagen Banks, that you can take either through the aquarium in Boston, or several places take trips out there. So you get out in the ocean, really get a feel for it, and then, if you're lucky, see some whales. And we were out one day, and I couldn't believe it. It looked like nothing was going to happen. It was kind of a rainy day. And then, just like suddenly, like a rocket coming out of the water, this
whale breached just straight up in the air like a rocket, and it was amazing. And then when you read the same thing in Moby Dick, you just go, oh my gosh, you know, you feel a little bond with the writer. And then also that can make you get out and have experiences traveling that you wouldn't otherwise have.
Well, you just put Nantucket back on my bucket list.
Oh, yes, beautiful.
That's
a great place to go. You know, just speaking about, you know, maybe saving money and that sort of thing, go off-season to Nantucket. It's great. All of these places are great. If you can just go slightly off-season, that's really fun with a group, and you can save a little money that way.
Deb emails, what recommendations do you have for Alaska or New Mexico? Well, I know you have a chapter on Santa Fe, but I'm not sure you have anything for Alaska.
Alaska, you know, I think James Michener has a book about that. There are quite a few books about Alaska, and of course the Robert W. Service poems that are such classics about the prospectors there. I don't have a list right off the top of my head, but that might be something I could put on my blog.
What about Santa Fe? What's a highlight there or two?
That's one of my favorite spots because there's something for everyone to do there, no matter, you know, like art, shopping, outdoor stuff, great food.
What's the literary connection?
I focus that one on Willa Cather's book, Death Comes for the Archbishop, which she wrote having traveled there many times. And it's just ever so slightly fiction. A lot of it is based on a real priest and his work there. And literally, it's like a travel log. It's a fiction book, but you can walk through Santa Fe and go, oh, here's that place, here's that place, all the things she talks about. And her descriptions of the natural world there are great. It really makes you focus on, you know, your environment and what you're seeing. And that's kind of fun, too, because if you go to Bishop's Lodge, which is a resort just north of Santa Fe, you can. It's where the bishop of her story retired and had a little chapel, and you can actually see the peach tree he planted and things like that. But at the same time, there are a lot of other more current books that are set in New Mexico and Santa Fe. One of the favorites a lot of people have is Tony Hillerman. A lot of his books are generally murder mysteries, and those are set all around New Mexico, the Southwest. There's also some great Native American-related writers there. There's a guy named Oliver Lafarge who wrote a story called Laughing Boy, a Navajo story that won the Pulitzer Prize. So you can really, by reading about these places, get a real sense of the history and the various people that live there that make it what it is.
Let's go to Steve in Milwaukee now. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to say that I took the family on a road trip over spring recess, and we headed out to South Carolina. I had grown up reading Archibald Rutledge. He was a very prolific writer for Outdoor Life, Field and Stream, you know, the outdoor magazines, hunting and fishing stories. His family plantation precedes the Revolutionary War, and it's part of the State Historical Society now. It's not an improved plantation. And when I got there, I, you know, sat on the veranda, and I could picture all of his stories because they're all about the plantation and that area where he lived. And interesting, Francis Marion, the Swamp Fox, hid out in that plantation during the Revolutionary War. It's in the Francis Marion National Forest. George Washington visited the plantation, and there's a big oak right out in front of the plantation that George Washington, they call it the George Washington tree. He saved that oak. They were going to cut it down, and he said, no, let it grow. So that's still growing there. And it's an unimproved plantation, and after reading about it and now going to see it, you know, it just blows my mind that I could picture everything that the man talked about in all of his stories.
A reaction, Terry?
Well, that's exactly what I'm encouraging people to do, and it's so exciting. It blows your mind when you see some of those things. You feel like you just, you know, it's like you can just picture George Washington there or the Swamp Fox. Where is that plantation, by the way?
It's about 50 miles north of Charleston.
Okay.
Near McCullenville.
Mm-hmm.
And Archibald Rutledge was the poet laureate for many years, from the 30s through the 70s, for the state of South Carolina. He was an English teacher. He didn't live on a plantation. For many years, he taught at the Merseburg Academy in Pennsylvania, and would travel back. And then when he retired, he rebuilt the plantation. So it's very pristine. It's not an improved one like you would go on a big tour to see.
Right, but and you do feature Charleston in the book too, don't you, Terry?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, so. I do, and including some plantation visits that are south of Charleston. They're pretty close, and it's interesting because there are some that are, you know, fancy improved plantations, and there are some that are not. And I think that I agree; those give you a little bit more of a idea of what it was really like. The Rutledges, I don't know if this more contemporary writer is related. That's a really prominent name around Charleston. In fact, one of the places I suggest staying is called the Rutledge House, and that family was part of some of the first people during the Revolutionary War to write the Constitution and things after the war, to write the Constitution and things like that. I always think of Charleston as being a Civil War place, but it goes way, way back further than that. There are a lot of other great writers around there. I should mention one of the things I talk about in that chapter is how people are looking at the Civil War and that kind of old fashioned gone with the wind view of the South in the Civil War, the antebellum South. They're broadening the view of that now to include the people, the enslaved Africans who actually built those plantations and cultivated the crops and that sort of thing. So there's a book I recommend called Slaves in the Family by Edward Ball, who traces back, he came from a prominent family there also, and traces back the African-American relatives that he had. But on a more contemporary level, there's some other great books. Pat Conroy is really one of everybody's favorites. His books take place around there also.
Well, I know that you're probably doing a lot of work on the new book, but where's the next literary travel destination for you?
I'm going back to Boston in August and kind of revisiting some of the places that are in the book because I like them a lot. So much fun. But also then after that, I'm going to France. So I'd like to expand this to maybe some European places that, the British Isles are a natural. And then the other thing is, I think a lot of people have said, hey, you should do something about traveling, literary travel with kids. And that would be really fun to do, too. So I've got a couple of ideas percolating here.
Well,
the other funny
good.
Thing is, people, when I give talks about this book, a lot of men come up to me afterward and say, you should do one for guys. And I said, all right, that probably wouldn't be that hard. We just have a little less shopping, a little more NASCAR. We'd be all set.
Well, enjoy your travels. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Terry Peterson-Smith, journalist, editor, travel blogger, author of Off the Beaten Page, The Best Trips for Lit Lovers, Book Clubs, and Girls on Getaways. She blogs at offthebeatenpagetravel.com. And she said that you can share some of your literary travel adventures with her on her blog, so check that out. Well, thanks very much to Christy Taylor. She produced this program. Thanks to Bill Martins for on-air direction. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. And I hope you join us tomorrow at this time because it's the regular Friday Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.